Thank you for downloading this episode of Folk on Foot. Before we start, I just wanted to share a brief message. If you like what we do, we really need your support to keep going. You can join our wonderful band of members and you'll get great rewards. These include access to our amazing Folk on Foot on Film archive of hundreds of songs shot on location on our travels around the UK and Ireland. To sign up, just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. You'll also get an ad-free version of all our episodes and an email postcard from me each time we go on a walk. If you just want the ad-free version, it'll cost you £3 a month, and you can get it through your Apple Podcast app or at folkonfoot.com/support us. Finally, if you don't want to make a regular commitment but do want to show how much you love us, you can simply buy us a coffee. You can also do that at folkonfoot.com/support us. Every penny we get goes back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So thank you and enjoy the walk. I'm standing on the banks of the mighty River Thames in Wallingford in Oxfordshire, and the river's flowing past really fast. It's been flooding, I think, quite recently here. And I'm looking for St Leonard's Church, where I'm going to meet two wonderful folk musicians, Jackie Oates, the singer and instrumentalist, and John Spires, the squeezebox player, who we've heard from on this podcast before. But we've never heard them together. And that's a wonderful combination. We're going to hear their stories and their songs as we walk along the path of the Thames. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning.
John, good morning.
Hello.
Welcome. It's so wonderful to be with you here.
Oh, it's such a treat. Thank you.
And we're in the church grounds, the churchyard, next to a magnolia tree, and the blossoms coming out. The birds are starting to sing. It's springtime. This is a very special church for you, isn't it, Jackie?
Yeah, so this is a little church where we got married in, not me and John, me and my husband in 2014.
And what was the wedding like?
Oh, it was lovely. It was a bit like Dartmoor Folk Festival, but in wedding style. So there were two Morris teams. We had Bristol Morris and Headington Quarry Morris. And my favourite singing group, this a cappella group called The Clack, came up all the way from Devon to sing to us. And, oh, it was so special. And it was the last time I saw my dad as well, so it was really poignant.
Yeah, a big memory for you then, here in this churchyard. And we're in Wallingford, which is a pretty historic town, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very special town. It was in the Domesday book. It's we're in the Saxon part of Wallingford now.
And we're near to the Thames, I think.
Yes, we're right by the Thames path.
Are we going to walk down there?
Yes, we are.
Oh, that's fantastic. John, I wanted to just check out how you and Jackie first came together and made music together.
Well, we're the last two musicians of our generation living in Oxfordshire, as I can work out, because lots of other people moved to places far more financially sensible to live. But we've got roots here and stayed, and we were both going to the Nettlebed Folk Club, which is quite close to here.
And legendary folk club,
isn't it? It was very famous, yeah. And we ended up sort of doing a few little bits as warm-ups for the other acts there, because we were there so often, and we almost had enough to do something. And I think it was through your lace-telling project that I kind of came on board a bit more.
Tell us about your lace project.
I was artist-in-residence at the Museum of English Rural Life in Reading, and I had to create a piece of music and go around the museum and find the objects that I was inspired by. And I was really drawn to the lace makers' bobbins and pillows, and I didn't really know why. And then it dawned on me that I had been clearing my parents' house and I'd got rid of all of these bobbins that belonged to my mum. Just so happened that the place where the museum is based was an old halls of residence at Reading University where she'd lived.
Wow. Did she make lace?
She tried all sorts of crafty things. At the time, there's a lot of sadness. She was going downhill very rapidly with Alzheimer's, so I wanted to create a piece for her that kind of made up for the fact that I just got rid of all of these lace makers' items. So we wrote a radio ballad exploring the history of lace telling and the kind of lace making tradition sort of around this area.
Well, let's talk more about that later, but would you give us a taste of that? Would you play some music from it?
Yes, we could do that, couldn't we?
Yeah.
So what are you going to play?
We are going to play a tune that John wrote called Gallons of Brandy, and then we're going to segue into a tune that I wrote that's set to the words of a lacemaker's tale called The Fox Tale.
What's a lacemaker's tale?
Tales are little four-line songs that were taught to lacemaking children to teach them very intricate lace stitches.
So did they use the song as a rhythm for their work?
They worked in sets of 12, so each number represents a pin that's going into the lace. And this is also a bit of local history, so they've combined it with a sort of quite a scandalous event that happened.
They often have stories running through them, but then you'll find the numbers come in showing it's a working song and trying to remind people how to do the actual patterns in the lace.
So will we hear about the scandal in the song then?
You will. Yeah, it's quite dark.
It goes past quite quickly,
it doesn't
does.
It?
We'll pay careful attention. Thank you very much. You're standing here under this great yew tree and next to the church. It's going to be wonderful to hear the music here.
Stamper in at 4, make her work hard at 5, give her a supper at 6, send her to bed at 7, cover her up at 8, throw her downstairs at 9, break her neck at 10, well, knit by 11, stamp her in at 12. How can I make the clock strike 1 unless you tell me how many you've done, tell me how many you've done. Stamp her in at 4, make her work hard at 5,
supper at 6, send her to bed at 7, cover her up at 8, throw her downstairs at 9, break her neck at 10, well, it by 11, stamp her in at 12. How can I make the clock strike 1? 1 unless you tell me how many you've done. Tell me how many you've done.
That was wonderful. Thank you very much. So stamp her in.
Yeah.
What was going on?
It was nasty, really nasty. So it was a young man who had been courting possibly a lace maker, young girl, and he threw her down the stairs and then buried her in the garden.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So it's a bit like a broadside ballad that had been turned into this rhyme that lace making girls chanted because they liked scary things.
Oh, did they?
They did, yeah.
Right. So like a bit like a horror story, really,
yeah.
Revelling in the
so
kind
all of the
lacemakers'
tales are like gothic witch ballads and sort of these things that make them feel a bit more alive doing this really tedious, monotonous task.
Yeah, it's interesting. They often sort of bridge a gap between the slightly dark side of nursery rhymes and fully grown-up songs because it was often quite...
Yeah,
young girls,
teenage girls who would be making lace sort of all day from 5 in the morning until sort of they were sat by candlelight. And you would have seen, what's fascinating, places like this, you would have seen lace makers dotted around all over the place because they'd work outside.
Oh, really?
In the springtime, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to get going on our walk.
Yes. So,
notice that there's a lot of air traffic today, but we can walk down to the Thames now, I think.
Oh, lovely! Yeah, we're just by the Thames here.
Yeah, let's get going.
Get boat noise as well.
So we're walking around the back of the church now, and there's a lovely old brick wall on one side and the churchyard on the other.
Yeah.
And you get a sense of history in this town, don't you?
Yeah,
there really
do.
Is wonderful old buildings over to our right with half-timbered walls and moss-covered roofs and so on.
Yeah.
So what brought you here, Jackie?
It was quite random, really. I went to university in Devon, in Exeter. And then I met my now husband at a folk festival, and he was in Bristol at the time. We were both very young, and did long distance for 7 years, and then he got a job in Oxford. So we went to Oxford for a couple of years, and then I'm also a violin and piano teacher, so I started teaching my friend's children in Wallingford, and within 3 weeks I was working here every day and driving here, and I just fell in love with it, really.
What do you like about it?
I like the sense of community, and that there are all these special events on. There's the Kynecroft, which is this big area of grass, so they have a festival there.
Bunk
every
Fest.
Summer, yes.
I've been
and
to it.
Fireworks, and it's just a really peaceful place.
And gorgeous. Is there much music?
There is, yeah, there's loads. And my husband's a Morris dancer, and this area is very good for dancing. There's a session at the pub every week, so, yeah.
So it sounds like you've moved around quite a lot in your life. Where were you originally born and brought up?
I think I was born in Congleton in Cheshire.
You think?
Yeah. it was such a long time ago, so, yeah.
Not that long ago.
So
depends on your perspective, Jackie. Congleton in Cheshire.
When I was a baby, and then we moved. My dad was an engineer, and we moved to a little village called Brockton on the outskirts of Cannock Chase near Stafford.
And was there music in the house when you were a kid?
Oh, tons of music. Yeah, so my dad was a Morris dancer as well, and they had a big record collection. Dad played the melodeon and the guitar and co-ran a session. And we used to go to festivals all the time.
And so your brother's Jim Moray, isn't he?
He is, yes.
Although that's not his real name.
So his name, it sort of is his real name. It's his middle names, because all the men on my dad's side of the family have Moray as their middle name, sort of Scottish ancestry. But his first name is Douglas.
And we're right by the river now, and the birds just burst into song to greet us, which is absolutely lovely. And so, was there rivalry between you as you were growing up, you know, musically speaking?
We were very, very different growing up. So I was your typical girl who liked to please, and I think our interests in music were quite different at the time. So Doug was incredible at improvising and sort of learning by ear, and he was a very good drummer, and he had all of this sort of electronic knowledge, whereas I was your kind of conventional, do everything I was told, have music lessons.
So you were classically trained, were you?
I was, but we had this folk thing going on alongside. And yeah, my interest in the singing aspect didn't really kick in until I left home. Yeah, Doug was very much the sort of creator of the family, as I said.
Right.
And I loved watching him sing and play. And
then you got to university and the folk world opened up in front of you, presumably.
It slowly opened up, because at that point I'd only been playing sort of instrumental music and playing on my fiddle. I was very, very shy, didn't sing at all. Couldn't overcome the sort of the shyness, really. But then down in Devon, I was desperate to find some sessions, and I couldn't find any in Exeter itself, but my housemate had a car, and we discovered all the best sing-arounds were sort of tucked away around Dartmoor, and they were proper ballad singing sessions. So we used to go there several nights a week.
And that's then, where you picked up singing, was
it? Yeah, and then the determination to kind of get beyond my self-consciousness, sort of, I overcame it bit by just singing and singing and singing.
Now, I don't know if you can hear, but there's a rowing eight here. And we're approaching a boathouse. Is this a very significant boathouse?
It's
quite a big modern building.
Oxford University, so this is where the rowing club meet and practice.
I say, from my rowing days in Cambridge, which were in a very low down boat, that's quite a posh boat. That's quite a fast racing boat.
That. It's a women's eight, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're just turning in the middle of the river, and the sun's glinting on the waves here. It looks actually rather a pleasant thing to do, to be out on the water. It'd be marvellous, wouldn't it? So we're on the Thames path now.
Yes.
And I have actually walked the entire length of
that
the Thames
path. That is amazing.
From Lechlade in Gloucestershire to the Thames barrier.
And how long did it take?
It took about 12 years. because we did it in stages, my friend and I. And we kept, you know, taking a break and then coming back to the place where we'd finished. But we have actually done the whole length of it, and it's a fascinating walk.
Yeah.
I mean, even this stretch here is really atmospheric, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, one of the things I love about it as a walk is that it's very flat. So there's none of that climbing hill nonsense.
No.
But there's always incident. There's always something going on. Oh. It's a bit like Wind in the Willows, you know, there's nothing so good as messing about in boats.
Yeah.
So when you come on your walk down here, do you see lots of things going on?
Loads of things. I bump into people all the time, and there's in the summer, all the teenagers kind of hanging out and swimming, wild swimming.
So was it your family influence that took you into folk music, or was there a time when you thought, you know, there's other music out there that I should be getting interested in?
You know, it's always been folk music. I think it has been my family influence, really. It's kind of what I've always known. It's very comfortable to me, but there's this element to it that really resonates, and I'm still absolutely obsessed with now. And the music I listen to, I'm sort of, it still remains this kind of fascination in the human voice and these older songs.
Why is it so attractive to you? Why do you find it so moving and motivating?
It's pure and it's raw and unadulterated, and something about raw emotions and the human condition and the fact that it never changes, and that you can find a song from sort of over a century ago, and you can relate to it in this way that goes beyond language and words. It's kind of really heartfelt. You know, I love all kinds of music, but I want simplicity and escapism.
I wonder if this is a cue for you to sing us another song, just as
yeah,
we come out from the side of this new hedge here.
Good idea. Shall we do By the Light of the Moon?
Oh, yeah, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
So tell us about By the Light of the Moon.
Do you want to tell them, John?
It's one off your latest album that I played on, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a song about life, and the moon is this recurring theme that comes back all the time in the song. You'll hear the story, but it kind of grounds you in reality, like Jackie was just saying about folk songs. There's something grounding about the imagery in them, and this light, silvery light of the moon. We've all seen it. We've all been there, so it links you into the story.
And this is from Alfred Williams, folk songs of We're in the wrong bit of the Thames now, aren't we? The Upper Thames.
Folk songs of the Upper Thames?
Yes.
Was that a book?
These are his words, yeah. A book. You can hardly get hold of it now. It's very rare, but John has three copies
in
his shed.
I haven't got three copies.
You do? You've never given me one.
He's kind of cornered the market in folk songs of the Upper Thames.
got given another copy.
So is that sort of, was he in Gloucestershire?
He lived in Wiltshire, just outside Swindon in a village called South Marston, and he was a railway man, so Swindon was a big centre for the Great Western Railway, and when it was being built as a town in, I think it's the early 1800s, was it? Mid-1800s, he was sort of very much part of that industrialisation of Wiltshire. But he also walked everywhere, like people did in those days, and he used to, his passion was to meet people who had songs and get them from them. He wasn't particularly musical, he never wrote down the notation of the songs. We don't know what any of the melodies would have been unless there's another song and you can have a guess. So it's this lovely book full of texts of folk songs, but you have to make your own tunes up, don't you?
Yeah, so we've matched his words with another tune that my friend Kath Parry used to sing in Black Dog in near Mortchard Bishop. So it's a sort of conglomeration.
As I strayed along at the close of the day, about the beginning of June, by a jasmine shade, I espied a fair maid as she made her lament to the moon. Roll along, silvery moon, while the nightingale's song is in tune. There is nothing so sweet as when two lovers meet by the bright silvery light of the moon. And a bold fisherman, his arms they were brawny and strong, his voice it was clear and a pleasure to hear when singing an old ballad song. Roll along, silvery moon, whilst the night There is nothing so sweet as when two lovers meet by the bright silvery light of the moon.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
I think you entertained that coxless pair that rode past behind you as well when you were singing. But sadness, there was sadness in that song too. Do you like a sad song, Jackie?
I love a sad song, much more than a happy one.
Really? Why is that?
Because it's kind of nurturing, isn't it? It's a thing that we all experience. It's like the shadow side of life, and you need to embrace it and really, really like roll yourself in it to feel the joy as well.
I'll let you put your instruments away and then we'll talk more about that, okay? Because I think that's really fascinating.
Thank you.
So, Jackie, I think you've been training in music therapy.
I have, yes. I've just finished my master's.
What made you want to do that?
Well, I've always had this urge to do something after my undergrad degree and just have that experience of studying something again, but I've been a teacher for years, teaching kind of private music lessons, and I love it, but I hadn't realised that the love was as much with the kind of relationship as what I was teaching. And then I also had a fascination with why certain songs at gigs affected people in different ways, and what was it about the music that was bringing out that sort of empathic resonance, it would be called. My dad was a scientist, and I've always had that sort of technical interest as well in understanding exactly why something is powerful. So, yeah, it was all
so
of those factors.
So you noticed there were particular songs,
yes,
that people reacted to,
yes,
in an audience.
Yes.
So give me an example of that happening.
Okay, so there's a song we always do on the encore of a gig called May the Kindness, and it's written by my friend Dave Wood from Exeter. And that would be the one that would have people coming up to the merch desk at the end in tears. And I noticed that one was being played at funerals and memorials.
And what's it about?
It's kind of saying, carpe diem, like live life, you know, and don't worry about things. And just kind of be kind to people and appreciate every moment. But I think it's more the fact that it was my friend Dave that wrote it. It's like his soul is shining through both the lyrics and the tune. and it really gets to you because you can sort of share in his feeling. And it had a particular effect on people when I was in this state of grief in the years after my dad passed away.
Your dad died quite suddenly.
He died very suddenly, yes. So I was having a baby at the time. So one moment he was about to be a granddad. He had a cough, and within a couple of days that had turned to sepsis, and he passed away.
Oh my goodness, that's terrible.
It is, and before I'd had a chance to introduce him to his new granddaughter, he was very young as well, so...
So I can't imagine what sort of turmoil of emotions would have been going through your mind at that time.
Absolutely. It was really heavy, but also beautiful. And it's
changed my
life.
And that circle of life situation, yeah. It changed your life in what way?
In that I found this path to music therapy, and I understood kind of the gravity of music a bit more and why it is so important that we have it.
And did you start to look at the science of why it touches us so deeply? And
yes.
What is it? What happens to us?
Okay, so music is our very first memory that we have, and it all relates to attachment and your parents. And it's such a deeply embedded memory, far be it before you get language and other memories. So it's kind of the core of you.
So it's the first thing we remember, is it?
It is.
And is that why, for example, when people have dementia, that music is one of the last things to go?
It is. And again, my mum has dementia and she can just recall lyrics and like whole songs, but nothing else. So it's kind of harking back to our mothers, really, and all of those feelings, like incredibly important feelings we have that keep us sort of safe in the world.
So does it affect us in the womb? I mean,
yes.
If your mother, for example, is a musician,
yes.
Like you are a musician, and you're playing gigs yes. when you're pregnant...
It's very, is that... very important. It's all there, and it's all in our unconscious, so we can't kind of make that part conscious, but it's kind of instinctively part of us. So that might be the heritage reason we love folk music.
Right, so yeah. Folk music in particular.
Well, I think because it harks back to this kind of pre-verbal stage when we're all developing and we're hearing sounds around us, and so did our ancestors. And the songs we might sing when we're pregnant are the songs that have been passed on orally from woman to woman.
So can you use music to help people who are suffering from mental health issues?
Yes.
And how do you do
Very
that?
Much so. So it's your kind of facilitating, so it's their music that's helping them, you are just supporting them. It's the same relationship as you'd have with a child, you're kind of lifting them by the chords that you're playing or the songs that you're humming, and then you are taking their music, and it's usually improvised, and... just lifting it a bit, so it becomes the focus.
When you say their music, suppose I came to you with an issue.
Yes.
You would invite me to make music, would you?
Yes.
And then you would help me
yes.
make it better.
Yes, and I would help you to kind of notice what music you're making. So you're doing the work. I'm just being led by you.
And how has it changed your approach to music, to know these things, to have this training? Does it... deepen your understanding?
Well, for example, when I'm playing with John, I'm sort of not just playing with John, I'm noticing everything about John in that moment. So we're both responding to each other in a far deeper way than just playing notes.
I think that's true of all performing music that I'm part of.
Particularly your work with Peter and the improvisers.
Yeah, I mean, that explores it
with Peter
further.
Knight.
But with everyone I've ever played, I'm quite a supporting musician when I'm playing under songs. The nature of my instrument means that I'm often looking for tiny nuance in the singer so that I don't get in the way of the song but support it. And I think that's similar to how you say you act as a therapist.
And it's the audience as well. You can pick up the mood of the audience. So you'll go and do a gig on a Friday night and it will be a completely different experience energy-wise to playing on a Monday night.
Yeah.
And there'll be this joy in the room and you can harness it. So it's just kind of, I see so much more now than I ever did. It's literally changed everything. It's broken me and put me back together again as a different person.
Broken you?
Yeah.
It was a difficult experience.
It's very, very long-winded as well. The main one, the really profound one, which is ultimately what I want to do alongside the folk singing, working with people at the end of their life who have terminal illnesses and facilitating them to have the best end that they can, and going through that whilst sort of experiencing what was happening to my mum was quite hard, alongside having these two very young children.
So were you using things that you learned in your relationship with your mum as she was facing her illness?
Very much so, yes. She's got a little music player, and my brother and I have made her compilations, and they are playing all day long, and we know that that's the best thing we could do for her. And it kind of keeps her in a place where she's not unhappy.
So I'm just also thinking about the empathy between musicians, which John kind of touched on, because there is a feeling when you see wonderful musicians playing together of a non-verbal communication, a kind of vibe, if you like, going between musicians. I mean, do you experience that connection with people you play with a lot, John?
Yeah, every relationship musically you have is different. And the bigger the band, the harder it is to have an intimate relationship, which is why duos and trios are so sort of good for folk song. I mean, it's possible with more, but it takes longer.
Well, when you're in Bellowhead, presumably it's a bit tricky.
A band that size, you have to have far more that is dictated that you're going to play so that you don't get in the way of someone else, and you know that one person in the band at a time has freedom, but you can't all have freedom at the same time, otherwise it all falls to pieces. But with a two-piece, you can instinctively change stuff on the fly, eye contact, and it's really, really rewarding. And I think that must be part of what in music therapy is working, because the other side of folk is that it is not just a passive thing. If you're on the folk scene, you're likely to be taking part as well as consuming someone else's music. And it's not confined, that feeling of togetherness isn't confined to a performer. You can then go back out into a pub and sing with people and have that same relationship communally. And it's very good for people, you know, the feeling of singing in a massed group, absolutely out of this world. I mean, I recommend to anyone.
Yes, it kind of lifts your spirits, doesn't it? Speaking of somebody who's sung in choirs and, you know, sung in large groups of people, there's something that helps you
absolutely
feel happier.
The endorphins are released, and
there's an interesting contrast here, actually, because on our left is a meadow leading down to the river. We're just going back on the other bank of the Thames now. And on our right is a big estate of executive houses, which is the extension of Wallingford, I suppose, the house-building extension that's going on here. And you can hear the bird life here. They're all so chirpy, aren't they? Because it's the end of March and nesting, and the juices are starting to flow, I think, in the bird life. And there's a lot of dandelions in the meadow on our left, a great carpet of yellow dandelions. And then a reversing truck on my right.
A traditional day for picking dandelions for
dandelion wine. Yeah,
is St George's Day, so it's quite a way off.
That's April the 24th,
yeah. But yeah, it's a good month to go, and they're all out here.
Do you make dandelion wine, John?
Yeah, I've tried it. It's one of those ones you think they did it because there was nothing else at the time of year. I prefer the ones made out of fruits from the summer.
Yes.
Though birch sap, that season's just gone past, that makes a very nice wine.
Oh, really?
Tapping birch trees.
So which church is this chapel?
This is St Mary's Church. So this is a little church called St Mary's, part of the Church Conservation Trust. You get all these tiny little churches dotted around on the Thames path, and they're open all day for visitors.
Do you think if we went into the churchyard this might be a good place to sing?
I think it would, yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, so we get in this way.
You're going to stand in front of the church here and sing for us.
Yes, so we are going to sing a song called There Was a Lady of Skin and Bone. And this was like a pop song of its day. It was really popular amongst these lace-making teenagers because it's meant to be quite spooky, but also it's a reflection of the kind of life expectancy of women and that they were considered to be dispensable, have quite a kind of meagre, miserable existence.
There has to be a sad bit, doesn't there?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And there's a robin singing in the background, so that'll be lovely.
There was a lady all skin and bone, and such a lady was never known. It happened on a holiday. The lady went to the church to pray, and when she came unto the stile, she tarried there a little while. And when she came unto the door, she tarried there a little more. And when she came unto the aisle, she had a sad and a woeful smile. She come a long and weary mile, her sin and sorrow to and she looked up and she looked down, and she saw a dead man upon the ground, and from his nose unto his chin the worms crept out and the worms crept in. And the lady to the sexton said, shall I be so when I am dead? And the sexton to the lady said, you'll be the same when you are dead.
I don't think I'm going to lightly forget the image of the worms coming in and the worms going out. I mean, that is just... That's creepy, isn't it?
It's, it's certainly nasty. Visceral, isn't it?
Yeah, nasty. So this is the weird bit. We have to kind of go down... Can you see the side of the farm?
Yeah.
Lots of people do it. It's
okay.
All part of the path.
Okay. So I wanted to talk to you about cosmetics, actually, Jackie.
Yes.
Because I know you're big in the world of cosmetics, thanks to some work that you did for Lush.
That's right.
The cosmetic brand.
Yes.
And I had no idea how involved in music the brand had become.
Oh, yes.
Thanks to Simon Emerson of the Imagined Village.
Yeah.
Tell me about this. Tell me what happened.
So for a long, long time... the Imagine Village have had a sort of association with Lush. Mark Constantine, who runs the company, is a very keen bird watcher and a huge music fan. And he met Simon because they both live in Dorset, or did, and he was making this book of bird song and loved Simon's approach to traditional music and kind of making it contemporary. So we started making these spa pieces that Lush would use in their spas because they're all English themed and sort of centred around traditional music.
So you had the idea that everybody else does a Moroccan spa or whatever, we should have English spas.
Exactly.
And the music there should be provided by English musicians like yourself. So what sort of music did you make?
We've done all sorts of treatments. It's taken up a decade of my life. So the first one was with Belinda O'Hooley and this little string quartet that I put together with Paul Sartin and Barney Morse Brown and my housemate. And that was a kind of mixture of traditional nursery rhymes and sea songs. And then we moved on to a more vigorous spa, the back.
Massaging the back.
Yes, and that was with, it was called Walking with Ghosts, and it was kind of old recordings of source singers singing sea shanties. And
so I could be there on the table,
yes,
with the massage person at work,
yes,
listening to source singers singing songs about ghosts.
Exactly, yes.
And that would be relaxing.
Be vigorous.
That right, that's a vigorous one. Okay.
That's the vigorous
The sea
one.
Shanties, I can imagine the noise of the sea,
yes,
taking me away.
Yes. And then the foot, we've done the foot, and that was with kind of gongs. And I've literally just finished another one, which is about rewilding the skin.
Rewilding the skin?
Yes, and that's on the theme of herbs.
Right, so is it songs about herbs?
Yes.
Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme and all that
thing.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Right, and then and they're using herbs on your skin as you listen to it?
They are rewilding your skin with all sorts of things.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. Have you actually experienced it in situ yourself?
Many times.
Right, and what's it like?
Lovely. Really nice. Not like a conventional spa. It's very lush. They have all these little quirks. So there's a Hebridean spa, which Julie Fowlis has just made, and you get given a rune
to
take home. There's actually a soap. It's good fun. And because of that, we've been to all these different countries to kind of open their spas. So it's been like my day job in a way. So, and it means that I could keep up with the Imagine Village when we weren't being the Imagine Village, if that makes sense.
Yes, of course.
And then they made a little cosmetic named after me because it had oat milk in it.
So what's it called?
Jackie Oats.
So I can go into the shop and buy some Jackie Oats?
If you go to the Oxford Street shop, because this was a while ago now, so they only stock it in the big places.
So that's fantastic. Yeah. How do you feel about having a cosmetic named after
it's
you?
It's very convenient, actually. Yeah, and they ran a record label for a while, ECC, which is how I released lots of my solo albums. So they've been a real big element to my musical life.
That's fascinating. I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about one of your album titles, because your album's called Gracious Wings.
Yeah.
But what's the concept of Gracious Wings?
So do you read any Northern Lights?
Pullman.
Philip Pullman.
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Right, so there's this character, Gracious Wings, who's a harpy eagle, and in mythology, harpy eagles are said to visit you when you are approaching your time to move on to the next realm, and they like true stories. So they want, if they believe in your story or they like it, then you can pass through. And I was making that album when I was working in the hospice, and you often find that people want to tell you their stories. It might be like a confessional story or something that's been kind of within them for a long time that they need to release. Mm-hmm. And so I was taking these stories and facilitating them writing their own songs that they could use as legacy or as a gift for their families. And you'd find that once they had sort of imparted this, they would be a lot more at peace and often pass away within a couple of days, because sort of the human spirit to want to have a comfortable end.
Yeah, and a rest from carrying that burden of the story that they wanted to get out.
Exactly, and I sort of noticed the similarity with these ballads that I sing, that they're kind of confessional and they serve a purpose.
So you were fulfilling the job of the Gracious Wing,
I'm like
that.
The harpy eagle. Yeah.
Shall we go through this gate?
Yeah. Tony.
Tell me when you'll bring your prophecy. When will wandering streams be glowing? You see into the darkness knowing. Robin tells of winter. Robin tells of winter. Blackbird sings after the rain falls. Nightingale, she tells of night's pool. Lark, she sings so high at dawning. Swooping swallow hails the morn. Robin tells of winter. Robin tells of winter. Curl you crying far out on the hill. Wind and hail and mist are coming still. Jenny Wren, she sings her loud song in hopes the summer now.
So beautiful. And I wonder if there's a story behind that song.
There is, yes. So I wrote this song during lockdown, around the time we weren't really leaving our houses or gardens apart from to pop to Lidl. It was part of a songwriting experiment called Ondervinden, and each song came in a sort of chain. So you would have to write a song based on the previous artist's song. And then at the end, they put all the songs together to see if there was like a common theme that ran throughout. And I was on after Gwilym Bowen Rees, who wrote
He's
a song.
He's been on this podcast.
Yes. And his song was entirely in Welsh. But the word I could pick out was owl, T-U-N. So I wrote a song about all the birds in my back garden and all of the kind of common folklore about each one. And the robin is the most important to us because we always say, Grandad's a robin. So it's kind of from the perspective of the robin.
That's what you say to your children?
Yes.
About him? To bring his memory alive?
Yeah.
Now that he's gone?
No, he's with us when we go on walks. And then the little tune after, that's called Gracious Wings, and that was a very bizarre afternoon when my husband entered a solo Cotswold Morris dancing competition on Zoom.
Right. So, I'm just saying, my mind is boggling.
So for entertainment, we sat in the living room watching him on the screen whilst he did a dance in the back garden, and it was just really kind of ridiculous and, yeah, funny.
Joyful.
So it was to commemorate that afternoon.
What a wonderful image. And to hear you and John play and sing it here right by the banks of the Thames, with the Thames flowing past in a stately way behind you and the birds just coming into spring life was absolutely wonderful. And I'd just like to say thank you so much for sharing your music with us and telling us your stories and taking us for a walk by the Thames. Jackie and John, thank you.
Thank you for coming to my town.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Folk on Foot as much as we enjoyed making it. There are over 60 episodes of Folk on Foot for you to explore, featuring amazing artists like Eliza Carthy, Johnny Flynn, The Unthanks, Kareen Polwart, Chris Drever, Sandra Kerr, Catherine Tickell, and many, many more. So please do explore our back catalogue. And if you like what we do, we really need your support to keep going. You can become a member and get great rewards, or you can simply buy us a coffee. To do either, and to sign up for our ad-free version, just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. Every penny we get goes back into making more episodes, so please do support us if you can. Don't go away, because I want to share another wonderful podcast with you. If, like us, you love the glorious landscapes of the islands off the west coast of Scotland, you'll also love listening to the Scottish Island Adventures podcast.
Falja, I'm Cainioch, the Hebridean Bay Guard. And I've made a podcast all about the islands that I call home.
Regionally, there's loads of variations on black pudding down south. Seems to be completely different to
and
what we can get in Scotland.
Just about 20 minutes up to the top of the hill and there's this big loch.
Scottish Island Adventures is your guide to all the best things to see, eat, drink and do while exploring the Hebrides.
We're looking at the Lewis Chesapeake, Fitalisk Lewis, as they say in Gaelic.
The wildlife under the water here is just fantastic as well. You know, if you've got the sun beaming through the waves.
Come with me as I kayak on Arran, taste gin and haddis, harvest seaweed in Stornoway, and even try my hand at weaving on mull.
I mean, even growing up in the 70s and 80s in Lewis, you'd always hear the tick tick tick.
Immerse yourself in the sounds of the west coast of Scotland by searching Scottish Island Adventures, whatever you get your podcasts.